This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host today on this beautiful Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Now, we don't have anything to talk about with regards to market madness today. We have selected our winner, and they have been notified. As soon as we get a hold of them and verify their bracket, we'll have a little bit more to talk about, hopefully tomorrow, but definitely later this week. Now, here at InvestTalk, you know that we have one mission, and that is to make you a better investor day after day. And to accomplish this, we have a mix of educational and actionable material to touch on today. And of course, your contributions in the form of questions and comments and live calls, which we love, are an important part of this podcast. With that said, we'll talk a little bit about market performance and run down the show topics later on, but right after we answer our first caller question now.
Hi, guys. Interested in your opinion on a medium cap company based out of Bermuda, GOGL, Golden Ocean Group. Wanted to see if it's worth getting into and at what price. Also, is that dividend sustainable? Thanks for all that you do. Cheers.
Golden Ocean Group, GOGL, is a shipping company, and they ship various commodities, including ore, coal, grains, fertilizers, etc. It is a small cap company, not a mid cap. Small cap, $2.5 billion. And in that $2.5 billion, they got about $1.4 billion in debt. A little bit alarming for a company of that size, meaning they're pretty highly levered. They operate at an interest rate coverage ratio of about 1.76, meaning their earnings before interest and taxes can cover their interest expense about 1.76 times. So that level of leverage is a little worrisome for this type of company. Now, taking a look at their performance over the past year, it looks like they returned 44%. And as such, it seems to me like they're a little bit overvalued. They beat the industry last year by 14.8%. But over the past 5 years, they returned pretty much in line with the industry overall. I think what strikes me about this company is not only the run-up it's had over the past year, but really that growth is slowing. If you look at their revenue growth from 2018 to 2021, it was pretty robust, and it's been falling off. And so has their return on assets and their return on equity. So their cash flow also has been falling as well. So with falling cash flow and falling profitability over the past 2 years, and given the run-up in this company, I would pass at these levels. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 40 minutes or so. And here's some of what we have planned for you, time permitting. Our main focus point today concerns this question. What could fewer rate cuts mean for stock valuations? A key challenge for the Fed is unwinding the quantitative easing used to support asset prices and economic activity over the last 15 years. We'll dive into this topic and talk about interest rate cuts, interest rates as a whole, and what quantitative easing means. Also, we're going to touch on China and how global firms have been shifting away from financing in dollars and moving to the Chinese renminbi. Also, we'll talk about the Small Business Sentiment Survey that came out and what that says about the economy overall. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on some recent comments in a shareholder letter from Jamie Dimon. Now we have some caller voice bank questions as well. We are ready to play, including one on selling losses in a Roth IRA and CMI Cummins Inc. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show at 888-99-CHART. Now before we head to a break, let's go ahead and try playing one of more of those caller questions right now.
Hi, Stephen Justin. This is Nick from California. I'm looking at Cummins Motor, CMI, as a potential purchase with the fossil fuels being banned in California, if they do. Looking at battery-powered and also hydrogen fuel cell trucks, I don't think battery will work for commercial trucks, but hydrogen seems to be a viable alternative. So I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on Cummins as a potential purchase as a play on hydrogen fuel cell, possibly. Thanks.
So there's a lot of to dissect there about Cummins CMI. First and foremost, I don't think that California is going to actually go through with any ban on diesel or fossil fuels anytime soon. I think those were pretty lofty aims that certainly the adjustment towards electric vehicles only is slower than people expect. That's number one. Number two, I don't think that hydrogen fuel cells really have a sustainable future, or rather they don't have a future in a sustainable world when you're talking about renewable energy. But that doesn't detract from the fact that I do like Cummins Inc. I believe we had a caller call in about this a couple weeks ago, and it's a solid company because they've had some pretty consistent growth over the past 5 years at 7.5%, and their debt is pretty modest, frankly. And looking at that, the return on equity is also about 22% over the past 5 years. Kind of oscillates a little bit. It's a little volatile, but overall, I think it's a very well-run company. Now, something that I mentioned yesterday, is it's not just about how good a company is, right? It's about where you're buying into that company and where you're selling out of that company. And right now, I just think Cummins is a little bit too highly priced. Looks like the average analyst target's about 277. It's trading at 302. And overall, it's a hold rating, and I tend to agree. It's trading at a price to earnings of 15.6 relative to the industry average of about a 1. So I think that their growth has been stellar over the past 5 years. It may be taking a turn in terms of slowing down a little bit. I like the business. I just don't like it at this price. Thanks for the call. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, I'll have a live call from San Diego, and we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, please call now, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Let's go to a live call that just came in. Mark in San Diego, looking at VZNT. Do you own either of them, or are you looking to buy them?
Yeah, I've had them for a while. They're not a big part of the portfolio. I'm fine with the dividend. They're kind of breaking even, but I was wondering if it's time to spring clean or just sit on them for the next few years.
Yeah, well, I certainly think looking at both of them, the problem for me is revenue growth has just fallen off a cliff. And because of that, both of their profitability and cash flow has fallen as well. You know, we talk a lot about not chasing yield. That's apparently Justin's catchphrase. And I do agree, because I think investors think about dividend income incorrectly, and they don't perceive it as I do, which is a company saying, okay, we can't use this capital to grow. We're going to return it to shareholders. But, you know, it's not free money. When dividends come in, the price of the stock goes down, right? Because the cash the company's holding goes down as well. Therefore, the company is worth less. And so I think in this instance, your intuition is right. We talked about spring cleaning either yesterday or Friday, and I think these might be two great candidates for it for you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Now let's talk about the market today. It was an interesting session, to say the least. Pretty volatile. U.S. equities ending mostly higher after being down as much as about 80 basis points, I believe. Small caps, again, outperforming today, and big tech mostly higher as well. Looks like the dollar was a little unchanged, pretty much. Gold finishing up 50 basis points, Bitcoin down 4.2%, and crude oil ending down 1.4%, again, on top of that massive week oil had last week. Overall, I'd say the market's pretty much in waiting mode. They're waiting to see what potential catalysts can form later this week. We got CPI on Wednesday. We have FOMC minutes. We have PPI later in the week. European Central Bank decision on Thursday, and of course, bank earnings, which we've been talking about a lot starting on Friday. So I just think that overall, given the firmer U.S. growth backdrop from what we saw last week, and frankly, some out of left field hawkish comments from the Fed, I think that if CPI comes in a little bit hotter than what they expect, I think they're expecting around, 30 basis points month over month, you could see a little bit of a market pullback. Because, you know, I think if inflation seems to be more persistent than a lot of people have thought, then the hawkish language from the Fed is justified. It is possible that the Fed doesn't cut rates this year. Remember at the beginning of the year, a lot of people were saying the Fed was going to cut rates 6-7 times. Now the consensus is 2, maybe 3 times. I believe the majority thinks it's going to be closer to 2. So for me, CPI is important. PPI certainly is more important than CPI. I think my eyes are mostly going to be on FOMC minutes to see if really the language and the color from Powell's comments in terms of playing down recent inflation data publicly manifested itself in the meeting as well. That was the market today. And let's go ahead and slip in another caller question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, it's John from Georgia. I'm just calling about a stock. I want to know what you guys think about it. The symbol is RETX. It looks like they do pay a pretty high dividend, but again, I'm not chasing the yield. It's just something I found on it. I just want to know what you guys thought about it. Thank you.
Yeah, so looking at RPTX, is that right? RPTX, Repair Therapeutics. I actually don't see them paying any dividend at all. RPTX engages in research, development, and commercialization of oncology drugs. And like many pharmaceuticals that are looking for miracle cures, they don't make any money. You all know how I feel about companies that don't make any money. You know how Steve feels about companies that don't make money. You know how Justin feels about companies that don't make money. And in a similar fashion, I would not buy this company. They've never made money. They don't have any prospect of making money on the horizon. So I think your capital's probably of better use elsewhere. Thanks for the call. So I think we have a couple interesting talking points later today. One of them, you know, a lot of people talking about the fall of the U.S. dollar. And so to me, the most interesting one is going to be what we'll be talking about after we come back from the break in a little bit. And that's going to be about how global firms are using Chinese renminbi rather than U.S. dollars in order to fund themselves. And so for those of you that don't know, when a company operates in a global market and they need to pay in a local currency, right? They will take out loans, and sometimes they'll take out loans in that currency in that local market, but sometimes the cost of debt financing is cheaper in another currency, such as U.S. dollars. So historically, a lot of companies have been taking loans in U.S. dollars. Remember, we had near zero interest rates for so long. And they take those loans and they transfer them into the local currency, and then they pay in the local currency. So there's a lot going on there to unpack. And one of the things that they're doing is they're exposing themselves to currency risk. So how have companies adjusted given the reality of interest rates? We'll talk about that after we come back from the break. But before we go to a break, I would love to hit on one more caller question now.
I was calling about AMT, American Tower Corp. I wanted to know if it's a good pickup for a long-term hold. Thank you.
AMT is a REIT. It is a very big REIT, about $87 billion in market cap. And overall, a lot of REITs have taken a hit recently, and we all know why. And so taking a look at their property makeup, which is pretty important, in my opinion. It's pretty diversified. It looks like it's from coast to coast, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Virginia, New York, Chicago. And so that's one of the most important things about REITs. Are you diversified not just in the types of properties you're holding, but are you also diversified in the regions, right? Because different regions can be affected differently. So that's good right there. Taking a look at how the REIT is priced, it looks like it's relatively in line with where its valuation has been over the past 5 years. Its revenue is also going up about 8%, and its debt levels have been increasing modestly, about 18%, but frankly, $43 billion on an $85 billion market cap is not terrible for the REIT space. And it looks like its relative strength is starting to pick up a little bit, just slightly. I think now might be a good time to get into some of these REITs. And AMT certainly may be an example of that. From what I'm seeing, I don't hate it. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into a short break, and I always enjoy your voice bank calls as well as your live ones. So don't forget to do that now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
So our main focus point today concerns this question. What could fewer rate cuts mean for stock valuations? And so it's important to talk about interest rate cuts, interest rates, how quantitative easing affects the market as a whole. And so last week was, if nothing else, a testament to the complexity of economic prognostication, if you will. Because a stronger than expected labor market by, frankly, everybody, and a more resilient than expected economy has shifted Fed rate cut expectations pretty dramatically. Remember, we said earlier in the show and before that at the beginning of the year, a lot of people expected maybe 7 cuts, maybe 6. I was always in the camp of 3, but now it looks like it may be even fewer than that. And so the estimated probability of at least 4 quarter-point rate cuts by the close of 24 plummeted from 49.7% to just 21.4%, a pretty dramatic change overall. And so this change in expectation, frankly, could be a headwind to any additional rise in equity valuations to a certain extent. And so the natural next question is, what is going to happen with interest rates? And what effect will this path have on the market and the economy overall? And so even with the expectation of falling rates kind of taking a backseat, government bond yields have started to climb again, particularly the 2-year yield, climbing to 4.76% by the end of last week. And this inherent uncertainty has foiled some market participants' hopes. And so this week is particularly important because, as we mentioned, we'll be talking about CPI, we'll be looking at PPI, we'll be looking at FOMC, and that's going to tell us a lot about what steps the Fed will be able to take, what can they do in the coming months, coming quarter, and for the rest of 2024. Because despite the broader aim to rein in inflation and what we've perceived as success so far, a resurgence of inflation could be damaging enough that the Fed, as they said last week, potentially takes rate cuts off the table as a whole. You know, in the first quarter of this year, we saw, frankly, a pretty stealthy rally led by financial services and the energy sector, which signals to me, the beginning of a resurgence in value stocks. And this development is particularly noteworthy because it happens on the back of a market that has been increasingly dominated by tech over the past couple years. But that rally is certainly going to begin to be tested. And one of the best indications of that is going to be towards the end of this week with bank earnings and what they say about the economy overall, more so than what they even say about the financial sector. And amidst this environment, energy, which some may see a boring business, as we say, sometimes boring is better, has done extremely well. Pointing to a reminder and a lesson that I think all people have to think about from time to time, which is the more exciting businesses are not always the best investments. Also, just because tech has been doing well for the past couple of years doesn't mean it will continue to do well It underscores the point and the value of strategic diversification. So as you look forward to the rest of the week, which could be filled with some pivotal economic reports and earnings announcements that could shape the landscape for the rest of the year, it's important for investors to stay up to date and stay informed and calibrate their expectations and strategically position their portfolios in a way that sets them for the uncertainty of not just where the path of interest rates are going, but what that means for the economy overall. Before we head to a quick break, let's see if we can fit in one more question. This one came in from YouTube. And from time to time, we also receive these questions. And like our review questions, we like to answer them as they come in. And this question is about ADR shares. What happens to ADR shares if the company goes public in the US? Well, generally speaking, ADR shares, American Depository Receipt shares, are a way for investors to invest in the local line of a company without having to do it in the local market. So when an ADR is created, that ADR has a one-to-one comparison for the share of the underlying company. If a company lists in the US and delists in their local country, those ADR shares are going to delist. Likely, the company will offer some sort of exchange. Now, if the company just decides to do a secondary listing in the US, nothing's going to happen to those ADR shares. You can, and many companies do, list in multiple countries. Thank you for the comment, and thank you for watching our YouTube channel. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, an investing roadmap for mid-career accumulators. Workers in their 40s and 50s are generally at their peak earnings level and therefore may have more complex financial needs than their younger counterparts. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero and I'm ready to take your finance and investment questions. Call now or anytime throughout the next 30 minutes at 888-99-CHART.
At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
Call our 24/7 listener line now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
So we talked a little bit about this before, really a couple breaks ago, and that is the shift in global finance towards companies taking out loans in renminbi rather than dollars. And so we talked about how generally companies that operate globally have to operate in the local currency as well. And historically, the easiest way to do that, especially over the past decade and a half, was to use dollars, transfer it back into the local currency, spend the money. But in recent years, that approach from multinational companies has been sidelined. And largely, what has been historically facilitated by near zero US interest rates has flipped on its head a little bit. And so as the Fed decided to raise interest rates, the spread between operating in renminbi loans and dollar loans has widened. Companies that are using renminbi rather than dollars are enjoying a savings of approximately 1.5 to 2.5% on interest costs by opting to raise money in the local currency. And so this trend highlights two things. One, an unintended consequence of a rise in interest rates relative to other countries. And two, the increasing acceptance of the Chinese currency in local markets. So historically, there's been this general perception that this currency and a lot of other currencies for international financing purposes have been illiquid, but certainly that's been turned on its head a little bit by this trend. And so another benefit of this for companies, which we mentioned earlier, is that you don't have to hedge currency risk. If you're taking out a loan in dollars and you're paying in local currency and your revenue is in local currency, you're worried about the change in exchange rate between your loan in dollars and the local currency, in this case, renminbi. So if you're taking out those loans in the local currency, you don't have to worry about that. That's one less cost associated with borrowing. And so this isn't just the only source of Chinese debt issuance, because nearly $50 billion in what's called panda bonds have been issued this year, setting a pace that could surpass last year's record total of $143 billion. So as these companies look to benefit, especially in long-duration loans, up to 10 years, the strategy not only offers financial advantages, but also provides a hedge against really potential volatility, like I said, in the currency's value. But I want to mention this because there tends to be this narrative out there that the US dollar is losing its prominence. This isn't an example of this. If you see this out there and you see, oh, people are taking Chinese loans, people are taking Chinese loans, people aren't taking US dollar loans anymore, this isn't really the case. All this is a cost-saving measure for companies that hopefully they pass on to shareholders as well. Now let's keep it going with another question that came in earlier to our InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
I started investing in about 2020, and in 2021, I contributed to my Roth IRA, but I bought some story stocks, and these stocks are down by quite a lot these days. So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks? I am hesitant to do this because there's no tax advantage for selling in a Roth IRA as we would with tax loss harvesting in a brokerage. So I'm not sure if I should just hold or just sell, take the loss and sell now. I'm 31 years old, so I have a long time to wait to access my funds from the Roth IRA, so I don't mind waiting, but it seems like the money is down in the drain at this point. But let me know what you guys think. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
The first thing you should do when you find yourself in a hole is stop digging. You mentioned it. You bought these companies because they're story stocks. Some people call them meme stocks. And their price appreciation was completely absent of any fundamental reason, but it was a story. And there were short squeezes and there were gamma squeezes and it went up and retail lost a lot of money and it went down. And when you're holding a bad company, the best thing you can do for yourself is not hold it anymore. Don't think about taxes, think about opportunity cost here. Your money is sitting in a drainage ditch. Pull it out, put it somewhere else. Thanks for the call. Now let's head to an interesting survey that came out, and that is the latest figure that shows a significant dip in U.S. small business confidence. And it's hit its lowest mark in over a decade. And really, more than anything, this decline reflects the growing anxiety of a lot of small business owners about not just inflation, right? Because the business owners do care about price inflation. It affects the revenues, but wage inflation. And we talked yesterday about how wages have been growing in real wages for the first time in quite some time. And this has put some pressure on small businesses. So the Small Business Optimism Index fell to 88.5, the lowest point since December 2012, which marked the 27th consecutive month below its 50-year average. Pretty significant. And the uptick is driven, like I said, primarily by labor input costs, which has in turn led to businesses hiking their selling prices, which raises consumer price inflation for us all. And despite the cooling demand for labor, there's still been a noticeable uptick in businesses raising their compensation. Now, as with all stories, it's not all doom and gloom. The economy did add over 300,000 jobs in March, with the unemployment rate ticking down to 3.8%. And it does indicate a robust labor market, which is good for the economy as a whole. Yet, even with this being the case, sectors like transportation, construction, and many services are still facing pronounced worker shortages for both skilled and unskilled labor. Looking ahead, expectations of CPI for tomorrow are set to be a 0.3% rise in March, underscoring potentially the persistent inflationary pressures that help inflation remain above the Fed's 2% target, a lot of that driven by now wage inflation. So this climate kind of presents a complex picture for businesses because there's this inflationary pressure, they're getting more revenues, but the input costs are rising as well. So as we look forward, it's important to answer the key question about how these factors, not just within the macro scale, but in the micro scale for small businesses that are the backbone of local economies, how that will affect what the Fed decides to do going forward. Well, 2024 is humming along and we're into the second quarter, which is incredible. It's flying by. And you may have noticed that we've been telling you for quite some time about a new market environment taking hold. So serious investors need to be able to adjust their thinking and strategies to fit the times. Let me remind you that here at InvestTalk and at KPP Financial, we operate with the philosophy of independent thinking, shared success. We offer unbiased guidance and practice parallel investing, where we invest alongside our clients in investment strategies that we implement for ourselves. So I encourage you to take advantage of our offer to provide a free portfolio review assessment via telephone, Skype, or GoToMeeting and send us a message through investtalk.com. Now, we got one more YouTube question we want to get to today, and that is about SYLD. The question is, what are your thoughts on the SYLD ETF? Could it be a better hold than the S&P 500? So the SYLD ETF is the Cambria Shares, or rather Cambria Shareholder Yield ETF. And so it actively selects the U.S. stocks that exhibit high shareholder yield by looking at their dividend payments and share buybacks. It uses a quantitative proprietary algorithm then to rank these stocks, takes the top 100, and then equal weights it. That's a lot going on. So how does it look? Well, it looks like it's about 35% large caps, 55% mid caps, rather 53% mid caps, and then about 10% small caps. So to me, it looks like it's weighting mid caps pretty heavily, something I frankly do like. Unsurprisingly, if you're looking at dividend yield and shareholder buybacks, what's it going to focus a lot on? Energy. So energy is weighted at 25% here, financials 20%, non-energy materials 16%, consumer cyclicals 16%. And how much do they charge for this? About 59 basis points. So my thoughts on this are a little mixed. Number one, I like the market cap breakdown of this fund. I like that it tilts more towards mid caps and small caps than the S&P 500 does. That's good. I like that it overweights energy and financials, although I would say that given that the financial weight in the MSCI USA IMI index, which is all US stocks, is roughly around 4%, 25% might be a little bit too high. I think the biggest problem that I have with this fund is the lack of transparency. I don't know what it's doing. If you're telling me you're doing an algorithmic trading to sort into 100 names based on dividend yield and shareholder buybacks, which frankly, shareholder buybacks and dividends happen because companies can't invest in positive NPV projects with the money that they're bringing in. So, you know, these are certainly going to be more value-oriented, more older companies. I think what it comes down to is the number one lesson is always know what you own. And based on what I'm seeing, it's difficult to tell how they are selecting these names, which means it's difficult to tell if they have a systematic and consistent approach. So unless I can dig a little deeper, and unless you can dig a little deeper, I think I would pass on this one. Looks like we have another live call. Mac in Cabo San Lucas. KLG, do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
No, I own it. And it's had such a good run up, I was thinking about taking some profits. Wanted to see what you think of it.
I'm never against taking profits. I think we all know that. And KLG is Kellogg, cereal company. I used to eat Kellogg products as a child. I think a lot of us eat Kellogg products as a child as well. And so taking a look at this company, I mean, it has had a pretty big run-up. Its debt levels are modest. I don't see anything that's alarming, frankly, about this company. Its margins look good. Its leverage looks pretty good. Its profitability looks like it's decent. Its sales growth looks okay over the past 3 years. But if it's had a big run-up, I think you should take some profit. Just from a blanket statement. Nobody ever went broke taking profit. There's nothing wrong with rebalancing. You should always look to rebalance anytime you can.
Very good.
Awesome. Thanks for the call.
That was my gut feeling.
Thank you. Hope you have a great day. Bye. Let's do one more caller question before we go to a break. This one about CF, and it came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hey, it's Andrew from Atlanta. Got a question for Justin or Luke. Steve, we're praying for you. I'm calling about CF Industries. I just bought some more of it and brought up my position to 3%. How's it looking going forward? Another thing, I know you guys are out there in California, and I know there's a mass exodus coming out of California. Justin, Luke, do you guys ever think, man, we got to get out of here? And do y'all ever think about Texas or Florida or anything like that? Curious what you would say to that. Hope you have a good day. Appreciate you. Bye.
You know, there was a time when I was thinking about Texas, and then I went to Texas in the summer and it was 105 degrees and I came back to California and it was still warm. So, or rather, it was a lot cooler, a lot more manageable. So I think Justin would probably have the same answer, him down over there in Orange County, me up here in Los Angeles. I don't think we're going anywhere anytime soon. But more importantly, CF Industries, distribution of nitrogen fertilizer, owns and operates nitrogen plants and services, agriculture and industrial companies. Looks to me like it's pretty fairly valued, about 2.6 multiple on price to book, 13 on price to earnings, which is a little bit high, but its growth rate over the past 5 years has been 8.4% annualized, which is pretty steady. Its net income has been growing 39% over the past 5 years on an annualized basis, but most of that was from 21 to 22, and it pared back a little bit in 23, which is to be expected given the environment for the nitrogen space. Again, from a debt perspective, not bad. $3 billion on $14 billion market cap. Its short interest looks fine. Its cash flow's fallen a little bit, but that's just because 2022 was just a stellar year for this company. And its profitability has fallen a little bit as well. But overall, the company looks pretty consistent. Its relative strength has dropped a little bit to 70. It's been buying back shares. Its earnings outlook is pretty stable. I have no problem with this company at all whatsoever. Thanks for the call. Let's go to another voicemail because we have some time before this break. This call came in earlier, once again, to 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. My question is about Schwab U.S. Dividend Equity ETF. The symbol is SCHD. I was wondering if it would make more sense to hold this in a Roth IRA to be more tax efficient. And if you hold a target dated fund, if it makes sense to hold both of these together. Thank you.
So the first question, would it make more sense to hold it in a tax efficient portfolio? Yes, that's an easy answer. Secondarily, so target date funds operate in a glide path generally. And so SCHD is a market cap weighted fund that includes firms with a 10-year history of paying dividends. So it's going to be an all-equity fund. And so your target date fund, essentially what it does is it takes the year that you're supposed to retire. It takes really the decade. It says like 2050, 2060, 2070. And it starts you on this glide path where at the beginning, when you're younger and you can take on more risk, it's more heavily invested towards equities. And then it slowly tapers off and becomes more invested in fixed income as you can't lose that capital when you start to draw it down. So a lot of people hold target date funds. A lot of people hold equities as well. I think it's perfectly fine to hold both. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk, and I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. And our work continues after this break, so get your questions in at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk is here to help. And when you download the free Invest Talk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Invest Talk. I was calling about Sentinel One, ticker symbol S. It's a small cyber security company. I've been interested in it now and wanted to get your thoughts if this is a decent valuation to step in and buy some shares, or do you think that there's a better entrance point? Looking forward to hearing your answer on the show, and thanks so much.
So Sentinel One is a provider of package software that predicts threat behavior to block attacks on computing devices. And so you would expect that, given what has been happening with cybersecurity recently, that this company would be doing well. Over the past year to date, it's down about 18%. And one of the reasons for that is it just doesn't make money. Its return on assets is supremely negative. Its net margins are very negative and are becoming less negative, but still a negative 54.5% in January. But in 2024, it looks like it's supposed to make money. From a debt perspective, it's got $23 million debt on a $7 billion market cap company, and they've been able to do that because they just like issuing a bunch of shares. So, you know, cash flow's improving, profitability is improving. I like the idea, but for me, this company hasn't made money. It's been very, very, very red. And until it changes that, maybe towards the end of this year, I think there are better places to put your capital in this type of environment. Thanks for the call. Now, our last talking point today is an important one. And that is because when Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, speaks, the world, including myself, tends to listen. And so in his annual shareholder letter, he cautioned that the current economic climate, which has been buoyed by significant government deficit spending and stimulus, might keep inflation and interest rates higher than what the market anticipates. I do wonder where we've heard that before. And so what are the key drivers driving this persistently higher inflation? And can anything be done about them? Transition to a greener economy. That's one source, he noted. Restructuring of global supply chains in the wake of the pandemic. Certainly something that doesn't seem to be reversing course anytime soon. Increased military expenditure, at first caused by some of the worst conflicts since World War II in Europe, and now rising tensions in the Middle East. And lastly, especially in the US, the ongoing battle against rising healthcare costs. And so all of this comes at a time when financial markets are, as we've said, scaling back their expectation of rate cuts in 2024. And adding to the discourse, Dimon also touched on something which I've been pretty vocal about, which is the threats of private credit. Recall that the private credit and private debt markets over the past couple of years have been booming. And so it's more difficult in a private sense to know about these hidden risks. So there's certainly a potential for these unexpected risks to seep out into the financial markets more broadly. Because the impact of these things from what has been primarily reputable players are unknown to us. It's private credit, it's private debt. And all of that is compounded by what's happening on a geopolitical scale, in Europe, in the Middle East, all with AI potentially being one of the most transformative forces to labor and business and daily life ever. And so these insights from Jamie Dimon are in line with a lot of what we've been saying and what a lot of other people have been saying. And these inflationary pressures, the interest rate trajectories, geopolitical tensions, new technology really creates a complex picture of what the future, the next 3 months, 6 months, year is going to look like, which is even more of a reason for you to be disciplined, to educate yourselves, to stay diversified. I'm Luke Guerrero, and that completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.